So the panel topic is the pathway to Ethereum adoption, and it's going to be kind of just a little roundtable discussion about how these gentlemen think we will achieve the ultimate adoption of everything we've seen really over the last week. So take it away.
Adoption?
Seems to be going pretty well so far.
Vinay, how do we achieve adoption for Ethereum?
Well, I mean, it's going to come in phases, right? The first thing that happens is you get small numbers of very smart people, then you get big institutions, then everybody's using it even if they don't know it. Like, you know, how did SQL get adoption? You just wound up using it to run society, and we're all SQL users whether we notice it or not. Ubiquitous, invisible, omnipresent.
Do you believe it should be partly corporate driven, totally ground bottom up?
Anything bottom up that achieves scale will wind up as being largely indistinguishable from a corporation. You know, if you think about Linux Foundation, to all intents and purposes, it's a corporate institution, even though Linux is a very decentralized effort. The interfaces to society, like the APIs, are all corporate. So until we've gotten so much decentralization that the basic APIs that drive society also decentralize, I think you're going to wind up with even decentralized networks having corporate-looking APIs at the kind of terminus points.
What do all you guys think about the branding of Ethereum? The initial branding, which I think was more developer-focused, does it need to change? Does it need to adapt to being more end-user-focused? Do we need to brand Ethereum at all, or should it just fade, become the internet-like infrastructure?
Does the internet have a brand?
I think it may have in about 1995, but Ethereum does have a brand. Is it necessary? Do we need to be selling Ethereum?
What is missing? What do you think is missing from the branding that you're thinking about?
I'm not sure. I like the branding of Ethereum, but it's been a topic of discussion recently. And, there are people who feel like we really need to put it out into public consciousness, perhaps a world computer, maybe a little globe icon with two little Ethereum eyes and some keyboards hanging off it, little beard of keyboards and mouses.
Halloween, it gets to get a little bat.
And at Christmas, it gets a little kind of Santa hat. And
yeah, a friendly, trusting computer.
I mean, there's a good case for making that an explainer brand, right? That every time you see something that explains Ethereum, the world computer comes on and does a little bit of the talking, something like that. But in the long run, I mean, think of, is HTML a brand? It used to be a brand in the 1990s. Oh, HTML, modern, right? But, I mean, you know.
I think the brand is going to come from the community. The more users there are, the more developers there are, then the bigger the community is. And that's how the brand is going to splash on the market. So my focus is to find out, do we know how many developers are there that are knowledgeable on Ethereum technologies one way or the other? Are we talking a few thousand? Are you talking more than 5,000?
2,000.
But that's a small number. How many should there be? I mean, that is, I think, the focus. If we have more developers, both in corporate environments, in startups, in all kinds of different types of organizations, I think that's what's going to drive adoption.
Well, I mean, at that level, I think once you see large-scale adoption by things like banks, which I think is happening, frankly, faster than anybody's really oriented to, I think that the sudden realization from developers that if you want to make an awful lot of money working for banks, you need to get good at blockchain stuff.
But is there an onus on the... Who's going to drive getting more developers out there?
So I think early on we had an exercise that you led in Toronto where we were trying to figure out branding for Ethereum. And I think one of our conclusions was that we should target messages to developers, not really the end users, but let those developers build their business models and find their niches and their customers and let them market to the end user. So not really Ethereum, but you know, Netflix on Ethereum or prediction markets on Ethereum, something like that. So that's certainly one approach. We could try to emphasize that it is built on Ethereum, sort of an Ethereum inside type branding campaign. I guess at this early stage, because it's really very early in this niche, we kind of have to do everything. So we probably should be branding Ethereum itself and helping developers brand their projects as well.
So when we brand, I think it's important to understand whether we're branding against, what we're branding against. So branding allows us to differentiate ourselves. So are we branding against other things in this space? Or are we branding ourselves as, you know, against sort of the internet? Which I guess Vinay, you once said, Coke doesn't actually compete against Pepsi, it competes against water.
And our water is just the top-down command and control world, probably. And our Pepsi is Bitcoin, I would guess. So if we're at a Bitcoin conference, we tailor the message. And for the rest of the time, I think your inclination has always been to not even think about Bitcoin, irrelevant. I think that's becoming truer and truer.
What do you think is the analogy? Is it like a Linux? Is it like a Java? Is it like another Bitcoin? Is it, what's the analogy that Ethereum can grow up to?
I think it's the HTTPS padlock. So you know, this notion that you've got the HTTPS padlock, which is this kind of ubiquitous symbol that means security. The notion that you see the little Ethereum diamond and you know that the system will be secure and will be well behaved. Seems pretty reasonable to me that, you know, you look on a browser, if it doesn't have the diamond, it's not a dApp, it's not secure, you know your money's at risk, you don't really know why. So I think that would be a possible long-term, you know, model of public consciousness. You know, the sigil equals secure.
So the issue with that is that by relying on a particular icon in a particular place, we're kind of undermining the very thing that we're actually providing, which is an actually secure platform. So it may be that having, you know, the Mist browser identify assets that come off untrusted origins is kind of delivers the same thing, but allows the user, the default should be decentralized and a secure use of your secrets.
And we can probably get there in time when Ethereum becomes ubiquitous and everybody just expects this trust minimized computing platform. I think that makes sense, but for now, I think we need to deliver the message. For now, it's a world of human beings, and human beings need branding in order to, unless they're going to inspect the bytecodes themselves, which not too many of us will do, we need trusted authorities, unfortunately, to teach us what's right, to teach us what's secure. Even when Ethereum does become ubiquitous, I would estimate that that branding will still be really important, there'll be this one service that provides financial instruments and another service that provides financial instruments, and they'll need to differentiate themselves somehow. Apparently, that's how we do it with branding.
I have a question. How do you think Ethereum can achieve? I think I'm okay, right? How can Ethereum achieve network effects so that it can be deployed more aggressively and quicker? There's a theory that when the network effects start to kick in, then growth happens much more efficiently. So what are your thoughts on network effects and Ethereum?
In two words, infrastructure and applications. So with people using So the obviously Ethereum itself is difficult to achieve network and effects without, you know, there's no intrinsic networking until people have ways of interoperating. And so that infrastructure is, you know, will provide the ways of interoperating. So things like registries, identity, all the things that we chatted about in the standardization panel, this needs to be built and built and built and then built upon again. And it's that that will allow, will bring the rich commons of, you know, user interaction that will ultimately deliver the, you know, these effects.
Yeah, I agree. Infrastructure and applications, and to get there, we need money, money, and more money. Bitcoin has received, the Bitcoin space has received the benefit of about $1 billion over the last year of VC investment. And from what I've seen, I would love to hear your comments, but from what I've seen, a lot of VCs are really paying attention, certainly a lot of banks and accounting firms and other sorts of business niches are paying a lot of attention to what they can do on Ethereum that they can't do on any other system. I can imagine very easily seeing $1 billion or $2 billion or $N billion coming into the ecosystem over the next year or a few years. And that will build applications, but scalability is the major issue that that this system faces. And without taking some of that VC money and driving it down into the infrastructure, into the plumbing, that basically looks like every company that's getting funded should probably consider devoting 10-20% to helping out at the foundation level, building the protocol, building a scalable system. I think that's an easy sell to VCs. Do you want our product or service to be accessible to a fairly limited swath of the planet, or do you want it to be accessible to 7 billion people ultimately, or 12 billion people ultimately when we get there?
Yeah, Joseph, you mentioned the banks, and this is a very important point, which we kind of are taking for granted, but we were discussing last night. And if you think about it, the banks have not touched Bitcoin, but they are embracing Ethereum. And there are numerous banks that are either trying it or doing proof of concepts. And that's a big achievement that is kind of a bit, I think, understated. Because half of them don't want anybody to know that they are doing it. But some of the other half are saying that they are doing stuff on Ethereum. And I think that's a big achievement. And hopefully it's going to have a side effect of more growth and more adoption as well. So it's up to us to start to tell those stories. I think the market wants to hear stories, wants to hear different use cases and best practices.
I mean, I think of this, a lot of this is because Ethereum is seen as being kind of politically safer than Bitcoin. You know, the Ethereum community has a pretty kind of straight down the line technology, computer science, decentralization as an effect, but without really naming our enemies. And I think that that's been very helpful because the banks have been desperate to do something with Bitcoin, but didn't want to get a whole bunch of political rhetoric alongside of it. And the sort of economics narrative about decentralization is efficient with the current technology base, therefore it's inevitable, doesn't force the confrontation. It just accepts that the most efficient form will be a decentralized form, so there'll be a migration over into those forms. And I think that that's really the adoption curve, that, you know, we forget that decentralization is something which is a global mega trend because of things like cheaper solar panels, aging grid. You know, there are lots of things that are pushing us towards this kind of decentralized world, including just availability and networking. So we're another part of this global mega trend, which means that, for example, the banks are looking at this as, you know, part of a whole system of operations. So it's not that we're selling a single technology. It's if you're looking to adapt to this inevitable decentralization of society because of a multidimensional shift in the technology base, then this is a positive thing that you can do to survive those transitions. You know, there's a slow but very inevitable curve here that things are going down, And there's no way back up that curve. I mean, that's just what the technology looks like now.
This definitely has the feel of inevitability. I agree.
So if we have 2,000 developers more or less now on Ethereum, let's say next year or whenever the next DevCon is, how many do you think should there be developers on doing Ethereum? 5,000, 10,000?
Yeah, so I can imagine next DevCon, whether it's 6 months from now or 12 months from now, I would imagine that for every developer here, there's maybe 10 in 6 months, and I don't even want to speculate what it's going to be in 12 months. I think we joked about hiring out Wembley for this event this year, but who knows? Could get pretty, maybe we'll have a town in Kazakhstan or something.
And I mean, it's not just developer bound, right? It's also tool bound. So I think there are a lot of kind of big web shops, you know, the kind of 20, 30 person internet companies that could very easily wind up with one or two Ethereum guys on staff and an excellent set of tools and support services that would then be in a position to develop and deploy dApps without necessarily having massive internal expertise. So I think you could see the number of institutions that are functionally able to commission or deliver a dApp could be 100 times what it is now in a year, even if most of the understanding is relatively shallow, because most of the dApps will be as similar as websites are to each other.
Yeah, I think the developer numbers are kind of an interesting one. There's a lot of gray area there. The way that we've made the APIs are such that there's a relatively easy on-ramp from traditional web stuff into sort of full-on consensus coding. So at the one end, you know, it's much of it is about sort of classic HTML, CSS, JavaScript stuff. At the other end, there's maybe, you know, some pretty hardcore game theory and Solidity. And in between, there's an entire spectrum of ability.
So what you're saying is that some dApps are kind of invisible. They're doing their job in the background, and
well, I guess the point is that the actual number of developers are very difficult to actually guess, because quite a lot of the, you know, there could be like already there could be over 10,000 that know that there is such a thing as like this Web3 object that has, you know, allows you to interact with some magic invisible server.
I think that's reasonable. I think there might be 10,000 people who've taken a glance at this technology, haven't spent more than an hour or two. But I do that with lots of different technologies. I give it a good solid 30 minutes. but I think in 2 years from now, 4 years from now, I think the notion of developer might even change. This kind of infrastructure is going to enable us to build puzzle pieces or building blocks out of smart contracts or smart clauses that you can compose into smart contracts. And so I think lawyers, business dev people could end up being quite technical.
And one of the things that I think it's worth discussing is, you know, where there's going to be blood on the tiles. Like, one of the things that I've been talking about is that Ethereum is potentially the first really effective toolkit for white-collar automation. That you can see lots and lots and lots of people whose job it is to do, you know, perform transactions in relatively high-trust networks, like interbank trading type stuff, that you could see entire departments basically be replaced by, you know, half a dozen dApps. And the notion that one of the huge drivers for Ethereum development is going to be, you know, essentially firing paper pushers and replacing them with technology, it's a hell of a thing to think of yourself as being the bleeding edge of technological unemployment. But I do think that that could be a huge part of what drives adoption in the initial few stages, is large organizations that are under financial pressure because the markets are still kind of rough, taking 10, 15, 20% off their headcounts, you know, simply because they can go through and they can just take problems that are currently mandrolic and turn them into consensus problems.
It does feel kind of like we're IBM in the 50s.
Absolutely. That's not a bad place to be.
Jeff, how about the role of Mist, and which is the special browser? Do you think it has also a role in increasing adoption at the end user level? I mean, could it be, like, I have this vision where, assuming Mist gets adopted everywhere, it could be like the next kind of SaaS equivalent, in the sense that in big companies, when if something is not available, now employees can go on the web and sign up to anything that's not available, and they'll go and they'll bypass IT and be happy with it. So could Mist provide that kind of promise where anybody can sign up and conduct trust-based services without anybody's authorization?
Yeah, for sure, Mist is going to be a critical column in the push for adoption of Ethereum and of the wider APIs that are needed to really sort of maximize the value of Ethereum. And it's not just Mist. There's also various other projects out there that are trying to bring these APIs into a user-focused gateway. Be it on the dev grants or private projects.
Yeah, I mean, I think the concept behind it is self, like having self ownership and self authority to get on a service that has a trust based component, without asking anybody's authorization, without asking the IT department for something. That's the promise, I think.
So there's if you read I think it was Eric Raymond's book again. How did Linux become so incredibly popular? It was called Under the Radar, and that was it, right? Linux was too easy to not use as a sysadmin in a big corporation. If you used if you had a niggling problem with your IT infrastructure, then you could either fill out however many forms, pray to your God, and beg your manager to sign off an additional operating system license and whatever, I don't know, hardware that would require. Or you would just find some old dead box in the corner and install Slackware on it. And that's why Linux in the enterprise is a thing, is because the IT guys didn't have to ask permission.
Maybe we should give away Ethereum for free. Switching gears a little bit, I'm really curious about your thoughts on IoT as a use case, as a driver for Ethereum adoption. I've been surprised to hear lots of different opinions on that. I think it's a no-brainer, but many people still think that more traditional architectures, maybe they have vested interests, but more traditional architectures would be better for IoT. What do you think some of the benefits of Ethereum would be for different IoT use cases?
So, I mean, in a nutshell, they're idiots.
No brainer.
I mean, you know, when you see, you see, I don't know, Christoph talking vision of locks and resources in general being controlled in a decentralized fashion, and then you see on the other end of the scale IBM saying exactly the same thing, then you've got to start thinking, actually, there's probably something in it. It's the only way to scale. If you talk to IBM, the first thing they say is, well, you know, we don't want to run the server infrastructure that's necessary to drive this amount of stuff. We don't want to have the legal department draw up contracts for all the various parties to have to coordinate with each other over things like, you know, data privacy. We just don't want to do that. That's not our core competency. It's not work that anyone enjoys. There has to be a technological solution, and they found it.
And for years, I used to talk about IoT in a computer security context as the totally insecure internet of totally insecure things. And the notion that kind of smart contracts provide you a meaningful alternative to, you know, tens of millions or billions of tiny little hackable boxes that could give hackers the ability to turn off entire cities. You know, it seems like there's just no way of building a security model that isn't smart contracts for IoT. I mean, there seems to be no other path forward. So a bit like kind of Linux gets mass adoption through Android devices, I think that might be the parallel to Ethereum and IoT.
IoT is a terrifying future in a centralized context, for sure. Should we open it up to some questions?
How much more time do we have?
Yeah, what's the time frame? I think there's questions there.
Hello. So I'm really excited about the potential for Ethereum to form sort of the bedrock of a new socioeconomic paradigm. However, I'm also a non-developer. I am not a dude, and I don't work for a bank. So I kind of can't help but get the feeling that you're baking a fatal flaw into your system at its inception by focusing so much on such a narrow demographic. And so I'm wondering what sort of outreach and engagement activities you have to try to encourage demand rather than focus solely on the supply of this new system.
That's a very good question. This ties back to your question about brand, Joe. I think, it is a push and a pull. I don't speak on behalf of Ethereum necessarily, but I think, we can do, Ethereum can do more, perhaps, or maybe the whole ecosystem can do more in education. Anybody who is on Ethereum has a responsibility or has a, I don't want to say obligation, to be themselves an evangelist and tell others about it, I think.
Tough question, but a good question. I can address it from a couple of perspectives. From the foundation's perspective, focus on making a multi-sig wallet really elegant and easy to use. Focus on making a beautiful, very elegant Mist Ether browser experience. I think and hope that will make it easy for non-technical people to appreciate some of the early benefits of the ecosystem. At Consensus, we're putting together games. We're also putting together an accounting system. We don't expect people who are very interested in checking out Ethereum, we don't expect them to fire up the accounting system in the first day. So we're trying to build some decentralized applications. Poker, democracy, DAO wars, prediction markets. We're trying to put together a very entertaining skin for one of our prediction market offerings. So we are indeed trying to create applications for normal people. It's just going to take some time. The platform's only been out for a short while and people are still developing.
I think I'd say that, by and large, demand has always been a major concern for us as architects of the system, but perhaps not in quite the same way that everybody thinks of it. We've always considered the end users, so to speak, from our point of view, to be the developers that are going to use this to make the final sort of applications and infrastructure. So from our point of view, the demand that we're trying to create is having developers want to come to the platform, find it easy to get to grips with, find it easy to learn, and find it easy to develop on. So from our point of view, it's always about making the APIs as transparent as possible, making things making the tools in order to make developers as comfortable as possible to allow them to understand what it is that they're doing.
So I think there's another way of seeing this, which is basically, it is the parallel case Bitcoin, where you need lots of mass adoption, lots of understanding, lots of people using it? Or is it SQL, where everybody's using it already because the infrastructure runs on it and it's just an invisible substrate? And my guess is that Ethereum is going to wind up being closer to the SQL end of the spectrum. Although if we will wind up being a major brand inside of computer security, where Ethereum inside equals doesn't get hacked, then it could be the other way around. But at this point, I think that the people that have the ability to meaningfully deploy a dApp that will be then used by other people are relatively small, right? It's institutions for which people are already customers, which is why the banks are so exciting. They've already got huge customer bases. Or it's people that are creating tools for other people to use. The big turning point is if we get a big social web type app on Ethereum, or a big game, right? If you see, you know, World of Warcraft manages its magic swords on Ethereum, or you get a decentralized Reddit where people can actually make a living as content finders, editors, creators, you know, something like that would suddenly change it. Imogen Heap's fair trade music stuff would be another possibility if you saw systemic transformation around fair trade music, something like that. But I think that, I mean, this is one of these things where a lot of it is too early to tell. Like, we're going to wind up following one of those trends as it begins to go, you know, zoom. But until it kind of achieves that liftoff, we're kind of guessing and keeping our options open on that, rather than having an actual fixed strategy. Because we don't really know what people will make of our work. You know, that's very much something where we have to follow the public rather than lead them, or maybe I have that wrong.
I mean in fairness, Ethereum has only been out in the wild for 3.5 months, barely. More or less so. It's still very, very new, and as Gavin was saying before, the focus was the end user was the developer, and now as more and more apps get out there, then the end user will also be the end user, like the user, the non-technical user.
Great. Another question out there?
Yeah, I can have a couple of questions.
So perhaps Gavin's right, and perhaps in the long term, Bitcoin will be an irrelevance in comparison to Ethereum. But surely at this point in Bitcoin's evolution and Ethereum's evolution, not only are there so many lessons to learn from what's happening in the big Bitcoin ecosystem, but also there's very valuable work that's being carried out, funded by those $1 billion of VC money. And so I just wonder... I think Bitcoin's not talking about Ethereum, but Ethereum has also made the conscious choice not to talk about some of the work that's happening in Bitcoin. I'd just like your thoughts on that strategic decision within this conference.
Yeah, I mean, so in terms of irrelevant, let's be clear, I didn't mean that Bitcoin was irrelevant in general, but rather simply irrelevant from the point of view of what is the Ethereum platform. You know, we're not direct competitors. Ethereum is very much a platform for doing distributed applications. Bitcoin is very much, you know, its own thing in terms of a currency.
Sorry for getting into trouble there. I agree. We are a decentralized application platform. Our token is a crypto fuel, first and foremost, and if you want to pay people with that crypto fuel, it works pretty well. For that purpose also.
Next question.
Hi. With the adoption of Ethereum and smart contract, have you ever thought about the social changes needed toward our vision of work? Because, for example, a lot of white-collar works will simply disappear.
I think I heard you say, what did we think of Ethereum in the future of work because the white-collar work would disappear? Was that the question? Well, we know that technological unemployment is going to hit really hard. One part of my family are Scottish working class from areas that were completely destroyed when shipbuilding ceased to be an industry. And, you know, I would quite like to see, you know, that kind of stuff happen to large areas where educated people are stuck in completely unproductive roles, pushing transactional paperwork between organizations. You know, I mean, we've got a real problem that we've got more human capacity and more intelligence than we have jobs for. But that's a limitation of the institutions, not a limitation of the questions. You know, if we could figure out how to organize society around something like, I don't know, building a Mars base and then maybe taking a crack at interstellar travel, I think we'd find a place for every intelligent person on Earth to work to the limit of their capability. So if we have to go through technological unemployment followed by a revolutionary renegotiation of the goals of the human race, I think that would be a good thing. If we just get to the technological unemployment without the renegotiation about the long-term goals, this would not be so good.
Okay, I think we've got time for one more question.
Hi. I think some of the demand for Ethereum-based applications can come from identity management, digital identity space. And I was wondering, what do you think, how Ethereum can help to make identity schemes more efficient, effective? And maybe you can touch on the terms of privacy and what's happening with transparency, privacy on the network.
Sure. So we are talking with lots of groups and working on building an identity persona system integrated with a reputation system. So essentially our strategy is to do our best to map what we see in terms of our interpersonal interactions into that space. So we believe that we represent ourselves from different personas and that we interact from different personas, whether we're buying or selling or lending, borrowing, repaying, or working together on a project or playing games together. And so there, in our Uport wallet, there is an anchor, a cryptographic key pair that serves as an anchor for multiple personas that you can create for yourself. You can have one or many. You probably want to have one canonical persona to which you attach identifiers like email address, attributes like a state-issued identification certificate. If you can set up other personas that can be unlinked and unlinkable to your canonical persona. So if you want to not have your gamer persona associated with your canonical and work persona, then you can do that. And in order to make these things sort of fuzzy and richly representative of who we are and more trustable, because people can look at them and say, oh, that person has so many different kinds of interactions, they couldn't possibly be spoofed. Persona serves as a container for reputational attributes and reputational attestations. So attributes are things that you know about yourself, control, things like financial records, health records, again, that state-issued ID. And those are cryptographically encoded and granularly accessible, if you make them accessible, to whoever you need to see those. So if you want to send your certain medical records to your eye doctor, you don't need to send your full medical history. You can select what's necessary. Attestations are things that people attest about you, about your conduct in different transactions. So those transactions can be on blockchain transactions in the different kinds of situations that I described, or even physical transactions. There's also the notion of just, say, having a cell phone broadcasting your presence. Vinay has his broadcasting his presence. And it's opt-in. We turn these things on because it's valuable to us to have each other attest to the fact that we were here in this time and space. And so you can create a very rich personal profile that's granularly private.
Yeah, I think that's a good start, and that can certainly be done on the technology as it stands. I think that we're going to need some further sort of developments, especially in terms of zero-knowledge proofs, to guarantee that, for example, if I have multiple personas, it may be that I actually want one persona to sort of vouch for the other one and say, actually, this isn't maybe a master persona, but it's like a slave persona, guaranteed to increase my privacy in particular ways, but I still want to, without actually transparently linking them, allow one to state that, yeah, this is a real person, there is some government-issued ID, but I don't want to tell you anything else about it. And for that, we're going to need a little bit more tech.
And where all this kind of reaches a terminal point is DNA sequencing, iris scanning, and all the rest of that are falling in price extremely rapidly. It seems like most future generations of computing devices will have at least fingerprint identification, possibly facial eyeballs. So at some point, there's going to be a settlement or an interconnection of biometrics and blockchains. And the necessary cryptography to separate those two to the point where you've got some hope of privacy in the future and control of your identity is kind of this ongoing technical negotiation. So the zero-knowledge proofs come in from one side, and we have to develop the technology side as fast as the biometrics are adopted, because otherwise it's almost inevitable we wind up with kind of biometric panopticons where somebody's bank gets hacked and they release, you know, 500,000 DNA records. Like, there are unthinkable privacy implications as that kind of stuff goes onwards. So again, it's a bit like IoT. There's really no other way of doing this. You know, we have to accept that we're going to have to build these systems, but we have to do it with the expectation that they're robust 10, 20, 30 years out when DNA sequencing is 15 cents.
Well, thank you guys. Give them a round of applause.